All right, welcome back for part two of our UI user interface discussion here on the Next Level Podcast, a miserable podcast of secrets. You know, we started talking about user interfaces last week, and we sort of got off track talking about things like Resident Evil and just about everything else that possibly came to mind. So we decided to pick up our discussion from last week and talk some more about user interfaces. We have once again Cow Disease from the Next Level forums, which you can find at the-nextlevel.com. He's graciously decided to join us again. Welcome back,
Cow Disease. Glad to be here.
Welcome back, Cow Disease. What's your middle initial? It's Cow what disease?
Now, are we going to keep Hurtado? Jonathan Hurtado. Yes, we're not going to edit out his name, are we? You know, I feel bad of it. You know, the last time I mentioned your name on the podcast, Jonathan, you know, I know that you work in the video game industry. I didn't know if you wanted to keep your identity confidential or anything like that.
He has done nothing but reflect very well on his employer. He's knowledgeable, polite, courteous, and full of information. So I don't know why he would want to hide his identity.
Okay, well, let's
pick this cat's out of the bag anyway, so let's just roll with it.
Well, okay. Well, Jonathan, do you want to get us started again with the user interface discussion?
All right.
Something you want to talk about that we didn't get to talk about so far last week?
So I was thinking about particularly what we talked last week was you really don't notice good UI because it doesn't get in the way when you play games, but you definitely notice bad UI. And I was trying to think what games I've been playing recently that had instances of bad UI. Well, I'll start off with Bastion. It didn't necessarily have bad UI. In fact, this is more of just like a nitpick more than anything else, but and you can see how even a slight problem with UI can detract from gameplay. And that was in the game Bastion, which came out on Xbox Live Arcade during the Summer of Arcade promotion that they had and later on PC, there's one section called the Proving Grounds. It was like the Battlegrounds, which allows you to do these tasks to with the weapons, like kill a certain number of enemies in a certain number of time. And they give you prizes depending on how well you did. Third place, you get a upgrade. Second place, you get a better upgrade. And the first prize, you get like a secret technique for the game. And whenever you complete the task, you have the option to retry the battleground. But the problem is that the game doesn't tell you that you can reset the game. Like what I was doing before is that after I finished the proving ground, I would go into the portal, takes me back to the main screen, and then I would have to go into the portal to go into the battleground again. It wasn't until there was like a message during the loading screen that says there's a switch in this level that allows you to reset if you want to reset and try again. But the problem is like the switch almost looks like it's in the background. There was no UI element to tell you, hey, if you hit this thing, you can reset the level. So that right there is an instance of where if the UI isn't clear, it can slightly detract from the game. So that's but outside of that, like Bastion's a really good game. I had a lot of fun playing that. The second problem I had with UI was in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, specifically with the life bars themselves. How many of you guys played the original vanilla, and how many of you played Ultimate?
Yeah, I played both.
The original Marvel vs. Capcom. Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm gonna pick up Ultimate. Just haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. Yes.
But go ahead.
So, if you remember in vanilla, how were the life bars set up in there?
They were they were up at the top. Player one would have a kind of a long life bar, like a long. I believe it was that way. And then underneath, kind of shadowed out, would be the other two people on the team, but kind of grayed out and smaller out of the way. I believe that's how it was. Okay. Is this a quiz? I mean, do I get points?
No.
I mean,
so
there's a good point to this. I played Ultimate.
So in Ultimate, what they decided to do was they changed the order of the life bars. So now your point character, your first person on the team, is on the center of the life bars. your first teammate, the one that's on assist one, is underneath your life bar, and your second teammate is above your life bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, that's really weird.
Again, I mean,
what drive me nuts?
some people can argue, well, you'll learn eventually that, you know, your first assist will always be underneath your life bar and your second assist is above your life bar, but there's no reason to do that. Like in a fighting game, you want to be able to, like, if you want to glance at your life bars, or you want to see, like, oh, who's on my team, like, who's next, you don't have to, like, relearn how, you know, your team is ordered on the top of your screen in order. I don't know, just seeing that is just like, it's unintuitive and it bothers me. I will.
Yes, and it costs you matches. I've lost matches because I said I've had one team member who's pretty fresh and one that was beaten up pretty badly and is healing, and so many times I would bring in the one that's weak and they would just get killed because I said, okay, I want to bring in, I'm pressing the left bumper, I see the life bar at the top, and it turned out to be the wrong person. So yeah, I did mutter a few curses under my breath. I totally agree. I don't know why they did it. It's boneheaded.
I will commend them, though, that they made it more clear, like, who has X Factor and what level it is. Like, for example, if you guys aren't familiar with the different levels of X Factor, if you have your both teammates, you have what's called level 1 X Factor, where you get a speed boost and an attack boost. But if one of your teammates is down, then your X Factor is at level 2 when you activate it. Gives you better speed and more attack. And if you're the last man standing on your team, then you have level 3 X Factor. And the X pulse, depending on what level you are, the X pulsates different intensities regarding that. And if you already use the X Factor, then the X is grayed out. Whereas in vanilla, it was just like this red dot that didn't change. So, so there was a good thing with the life bars, but the reordering was, again, something that I hated. And
it wasn't just you. It was the entire fandom basically hated the change. And during the, like, while the game was still in production and Capcom would release screenshots, everybody would be, you know, crying to Seth Killian, like, what the hell are they doing? Why is that like that? Nobody likes that. Are you guys going to change it? And then they're like, no. And they didn't. And it doesn't, I don't think they ever gave a good reason for it.
Sounds almost and like a point of pride type of thing, you know? We're not going to change this.
Which is very weird, just because to, we because, you know, like, there have been versus games in the past, and it's never been like this. I mean, Marvel Capcom 2 didn't really have this issue, and then Marvel 3 kind of took a new approach to it, but it still wasn't this wacky, and now Ultimate just decided to. It would be interesting to find out where these decisions came from exactly. And
they probably just wanted to do something to differentiate the look. When you look at a screenshot of Ultimate, you see it's different from before. I mean, because they charged a $40 game, and they just wanted to make it look so you could just look at it and go, oh, that's Ultimate.
I think the X Factor does a good job.
They changed the look of it. They really changed the look of it. I mean, there was no need to have them in a wacky placement.
Something just to change it for the sake of changing it and saying we have a quote-unquote updated interface, updated life bars, something like that. And then they just didn't – once they got into place, they said, okay, that looks good enough. So they're too busy working on other things. And, you know, the community whines about everything one way or the other. So they said, well, you can't please everyone. We'll just leave it in. And it's probably – it's not a big deal. Like I said, it cost me a few times in a match, but you do relearn it. It's stupid, but they'll probably go back to how they had it before in whatever the next installment is.
My only theory about it, because I was really racking my brain as to why they would even do this, and the only theory I had was that it's easy for you to differentiate the length of the life bars of your two teammates if they're separated. Rather than they're close together. I don't even know if that's even the case, but even so, like, it's still not worth just reordering the the life bars like that just for the heck of it. I don't know. That one, but that right there, it just irked me. You want to just glance at it quickly. You know who's in assist one and assist two. I don't know. It's just it boggles my mind. I can't even talk straight because it's just like I'm trying to figure out.
I think the main thing that really differentiated it there, which makes it a little bit harder to tell, is that all the other ones, they don't shadow it out, even though that was what Nick said, that in vanilla MVC3 and Marvel vs. Capcom 2, all the life bars are at full brightness the whole time. They're just different sizes. The other life bars for the supporting characters at the time are simply smaller. So it's very obvious where there is life missing, where there is red life that can be healed, and where the characters are. And in Ultimate, the two background bars are shaded, which makes it a little bit harder to tell because they blend in a little bit more. I mean, I can see what they were doing with locking assist one and assist two in very specific spots so that you can glance up and you'll know who's on what. Because I think the first time like I powered up normal Marvel vs. Capcom 3, I wasn't sure which one would be which.
Yeah.
And whereas it's very specific and Ultimate, I do think it's kind of a pointless change, and I do think that they should not have grayed out the other bars, which they were probably only doing because they mashed all three of them on top of each other like that.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm thinking, and this is for Jonathan or anybody else who can think of an example of this, but sometimes I've run into games with a UI that was unconventional and that I really, really hated at first, but then when I got used to it, I sort of started to see the logic in it, and sometimes I even, you know, come to like the way the UI was put out. And a good example of this, of course, is Dark Souls, which, of course, I think about a lot. And the weird thing about Dark Souls is that all of the buttons were mapped, all of the attack buttons are mapped to the triggers and the bumpers on the Xbox controller, which at first I thought was really weird because I was expecting all the buttons to be on just on the face, and just having to use all the trigger buttons for that was really weird. It was really off-putting for me at first. But, you know, the more I got used to it and the more I looked at the way the UI was, you know, all the different the way it maps four different functions to the face buttons, and then all the attack buttons are in a different place. It works very well, and I actually can't imagine doing it in any other way. Jonathan, is there some example of some UI or interface that you just hated at first but then got used to? And
not off the top of my head.
Was it Fable 3 where you anytime you wanted to change an outfit, you had to go into your mansion or something. You had to go out into like a different dimension, and you had a butler in there, and you had to run from room to room to get weapons. Wasn't that Fable 3? And that sounded like a really strange idea at first, but I guess it ended up working within the game. I don't even recall if there was an alternate way to just switch things quickly, but I remember that you would hit the pause button or the select button, one of those, and it would put you into this, you know, this big place that existed like at a right angle to reality. I don't know where it existed, and like, wherever the TARDIS exists probably. And you could just run in, and there was a room where you had your weapons, and there were gifts laying on the floor, and it was just all these weird things. It was probably the most unconventional pause menu I've ever seen, and that actually ended up working okay. I mean, something to distract you from how disappointing the rest of the game is, I guess.
I'm not a big fan of getting used to. Like, I mean, if the UI is bad, I think the reason why like a UI could be bad in the first place is that, you know, game developers, when they work on a game for a long time, they just get used to it. But the only like real way to counteract that is to have people test the user interface and see, how would someone who has never seen this interact with it? And if they're having issues with it, you know, you have to go in and make the changes. That's if a game has bad UI, it's apparent that they never thought about having someone like just sit down and say, okay, can you interface with this game with without having us explain what's going on. And so I'm not a so going back to your original question about getting used to bad UI, I don't think I've ever run into any instances. And particularly, I'm not a big fan of, oh, you know, you eventually get used to it and it'll be fine at the end. I don't know. There's something about that bugs me, and it shouldn't have to be that one.
It seems like with PC games, everything, because most development seems to be focused toward consoles now, it seems like even a lot of big PC and console release titles, and I think Skyrim is a good example of this, the PC version of the console game they have the same UI, and it's clear that the interface was originally designed for a console. I mean, Deus Ex Human Revolution is a good example of that, too.
That was a big deal for Borderlands and Oblivion. A lot of people whined about that. I mean, a lot of people.
A lot of the problem with Oblivion was because they didn't bother to do things like scale down the text size. So it was just like,
right,
you loaded it up on the PC and it's like, I can see crystal clear high resolution and I've got text that's
like giant goofy text.
Yeah. Well, then the opposite happened for, what was it, Dead Rising? Because they just assumed everybody had an
HDTV. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I didn't buy a 360 sub on HDTV because I'm not an asshole. So that actually worked out for me.
I bought one right as I bought it because I was like, oh, this is the future of gaming. I have to have my HDTV. And that was main reason I got one.
Oh, yeah, totally. I think, I must have got mine like right before my 360. But along with the whole Skyrim issue, there's a guy, Eric Schwartz, who posted up a blog on Game of Sutra. And the big thing is he goes into just how terrible Skyrim's interface is overall. And it's not even an issue of being necessarily console or PC based. It's just that on a very basic level, it's a really shitty UI. Among the big problems is that they've moved into having a ton of text in the UI, which, first off, is harder to immediately identify. You've got way more of it. It takes up more space. And even just their use of space on screen is just silly. Like, if you load up your inventory, you've got this little tiny bar all the way off on the left that lists stuff and has to actually scroll off screen if you only have a couple items. And then you'll have a little bar next to that, which will have, you know, your sub-menu. And then the other, like, literal half of the screen will be just a 3D picture of the item and give you no information about it whatsoever. And it's like, why is that there? Do they really need to have an entire half of the screen to go, hey, here's a picture of a carrot? And then all the rest of the screen is like, oh, here are all your items, here's everything that you have, here's everything that you're carrying. And it's just, it's silly for them to have it set up that way, both for PC and for console. Like, it's going to be easier on a console if you've got icons to immediately visually identify things, and it's going to be better on a PC because your mouse will be able to move over more things faster, and you can highlight and maneuver things a little bit easier. And it's just, you know, on a very basic level, it's just wasn't thought through. It was like no one sat down and went, how easy is this to use? Group that actually like really messed that up was the first Mass Effect, the inventory. In the original Mass Effect, they didn't have any sort things.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
they didn't have
that.
Any way to group things. It was just huge lists that would. I don't. What was the max item for each list? Like 50, or
something
like
that.
And so, like both on PC and on console, it was just scroll through 50 different items and try and figure out what you want and what you don't for every single slot. It was like, who did this?
I'm playing something right now that is infuriating me like that. I can't remember what it is, but I know it's something. And it's one of those things where you have a lot of I can't remember what it is.
How many games are you playing right now, Chucks?
How many games am I playing right now?
Wow.
Yeah, let him get back to
7, maybe 8.
Yeah.
That's enough of an answer, just the hesitation.
One of the things we were talking about, I think it was last time, was when we were talking about Resident Evil, was the kind of the not digital display that they had on screen, where it's you don't really have any indicators on screen, and it's just very loose, so you don't know how much health you have. Like, oh, you know, you're hurt, You don't have any info beyond that. You don't know how many bullets you have. I think done properly, that sort of thing can work well. Like, I really like it when games actually try to give you a UI that's directly built into the game and not just an overlay, like in Dead Space, where you have the life bar which lights up people's spines. Mm-hmm. Like, that was great.
That was great. I really loved it. Yeah, I love Dead Space's UI for that reason. At least that the life bar.
And also the inventory system and everything. How it was like a holographic projection in the game that you could actually look around and look through. That was really just a very
neat
way of handling it.
Contrast that with something like Resident Evil, where it always takes you away and makes you go to a full screen menu. I really appreciated the fact that the Dead Space developers really thought. I mean, that's an example of a game that they really thought.
Well, the reason they did that was because you could still get messed with when you had your menu open,
right? And they designed that in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the other games which I was talking about again before was El Shaddai. And there's no UI in that game at all. Like, if you hit pause, you just get a menu, which is, like, options and quit. That's it. There's nothing that you can select at all.
Does music play during the pause menu?
I think so. It might.
Is it as good as Battletoads?
The way they have it set up is that you still have a kind of digital display in how much armor the guy is wearing. Like, each time he takes a significant hit, he loses a piece of armor. You know, like, what was the game I compared it to before?
Ghost and Goblins.
Ghost and Goblins. Right. It's, you don't need a life bar. You can tell how much health you have just by looking at the character. And, like, you don't select between weapons. You just steal them from your enemies. The only drawback to it is that the bosses can have a lot of health, and the bosses themselves don't have a visual indicator. So you're wailing on them. You're not really sure how far you've gone, like, in to this boss's health or anything. It would have been nice if they implemented, like, colors or something to tell you what boss is weakening.
I was changing colors, you know, going from red to, or, you know.
Like, green to yellow to red.
Oh, like Konami beat-em-ups.
I like the old Capcom Konami beat-em-ups where the people would flash red, and they would flash red faster and faster as they would approach death. That was a... Or you could have a fucking life bar, like a human being.
I mean, you could have a life bar, but there's a lot of ways that they can show... Or even just damage, like, you know, each time you break off a piece of the boss or something like that, like you break off their armor or a limb or something. Like I think one of the bosses in El Shaddai, it's a pair of boars that have armor on their back, and the whole thing is that you break away the armor, and then when you've destroyed all the armor, the boars just die.
Was that in the Bible? I don't remember.
It was, the tale of the son who came back, the prodigal son.
With the armor fours, right.
But not all the bosses are like that. Like, I just fought one. I think it took me, like, probably 10 minutes to kill this boss, and there was no indicator. Like, I'm just beating on this thing the whole time. And it was like, how close am I? I don't know. But I do like it when they integrate it. I like the whole move that they started doing years ago over removing ammo counters and replacing them with ammo counters on the weapon itself. So
that
it's
was
like
Halo, I think, wasn't it?
Did it was Halo the first
one I remember?
Well, Halo was one of the games that had that.
I remember
PC
it
game
that.
Probably had that before Halo, but I really
Halo
am not
also had a
remember.
Was it a compass or a waypoint finder on the gun? Like, I thought that was really nice. There was that little arrow.
You made that up.
No, there's a little.
It did have a waypoint.
No, that was
not,
Halo.
Not on the rifle. That wasn't on the rifle. That was just on the screen, I think.
Oh yeah.
No. One of them had. I think it was the AR. It might have been in Halo.
Yeah, it was
the assault rifle.
Above the ammo counter.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're making that up.
You probably didn't even notice it. It's this little tiny arrow that rotates around as you do.
Well, who's got the remake? Chucks, you buy every game ever. Turn it on.
I do have the remake. Yeah, but they could have added that
so
in the remake.
Sad.
Or, you know, and I can hit back and I can look at the old school.
But the main thing there is that I liked that progression of moving towards integrating, like in every genre, integrating the UI into the characters and into the environment, as opposed to having a static UI just splashed across the screen. And I think that definitely helps a lot. It helps to draw people in and usually gives you just a more natural look for where things should be. and I really wish a lot. I wish more games would do that and do it thoughtfully, like not just sort of go, oh, you know, we're gonna just throw a life bar on a character because Dead Space did it. Even though, you know, Dead Space came up with the reason and worked with that, but like it would be nice if.
Do you think that more games will go in the direction of Gears of War and so many other games where you don't really need a life bar because you regenerate your health so quickly? And I kind of like the Gears of War system screen turns red and it almost feels like, you know, blood's pouring into your eyes and you're about to collapse, but then you go behind a garbage can and then the world is bright again.
Modern Warfare and Call of Duty are kind of the same way.
Uncharted.
I do like
the
that.
Same system.
Yeah. I think we're going to see that a lot more. It's going to become maybe the where the life bar was the mainstay before. I think we're going to see more of that because people like a little bit of challenge now, but they don't really like to die and repeat things over and over. So I think you'll see a lot more games where you can just chill out for a second, stand still, and your mutant healing power kicks in. So life bars might be a moot discussion pretty soon.
Well, because in Resistance 3, they did away with the regenerating health. Like that one, you needed health packs for that.
But, I mean, there's always going to be games that stick to the traditional style, but I do... I mean, I agree. I think that we're going to see more and more movement as time goes on, just as we have been, towards a regenerating system of at least some type. I mean, you're going to get games like that or throwbacks like Hard Reset, which are like, hey, go get some health power-ups.
I still have to try that. Forgot about that game.
Or Serious Sam 3, which is, like, that doesn't even have a life bar, I don't think. I think it just has a digital counter sitting in the corner of your screen that's like 147.
I love it.
It just spits out a number. It doesn't even care what the fuck.
I like it when games specifically take advantage of the platform that they're designed on to do interesting things with UI. Like I think the first Ape Escape on PS1 was pretty good about that. The way it mapped all your equipment to the buttons, and it really did. You really did have to have like the DualShock controller in order to play the game properly.
Well, it was a showcase for the DualShock controller.
We should bring back the VMU, like the Dreamcast, and just have your life on that.
Just have everything on the VMU.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
And another,
hi, Wii
another,
U.
Wii U.
Another good example, too, was Radiant Silvergun, actually. I mean, that was definitely a game that used the Saturn controller, mapping a different weapon to each button. It was very effective the way it did that. And so even when they brought it out for Xbox Live, whenever I play it, I always use a 6-button controller, just like the Saturn style controller in order to play it because
it feels a little wacky playing on the 360 controller. I agree.
Yeah.
The layout's not quite as nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, but if you use a nice 6-button controller works really nice. It's the same thing. So, UI. What else can we talk about?
Well, I mean, when I think of UIs, like honestly, console games don't really bother me. If there's anything that I have a problem with, maybe I'll complain about it for a second or two. Then I'll be like, you know what? It would be nice if it was that way, but this is the way it is. So I have to deal with it, and then I get used to it, and then I play the game. But when I really think about UIs is when I'm playing PC games, because there you at least have alternatives to what the horrible, stupid developers made. And primarily I'm thinking here of World of Warcraft or any other MMO. World of Warcraft happens to be the one I played the most. But when you're playing an MMO and you're unhappy with the way it controls, you basically have the option of making it your own. You download mods, the community really pitches in and makes changes to it. I mean, this applies to Oblivion as well, also Skyrim, anything else that's put on the PC, you have a lot of options. You're not just limited to...
Wait, you're allowed to modify World of Warcraft?
Yeah, well, just the user interface to a great extent, I would say.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, like, EverQuest didn't used to let you do that, which was when, people started making this stuff in Warcraft. I was really floored by it.
Right.
And it's Blizzard, huge. I don't think I could play Warcraft with the default UI.
Exactly.
Anymore.
Exactly.
I'm not just saying
I cannot
that to
play
be
the game.
Like an elitist or anything. It's just, it's so bad.
Now you're talking about some kind of because the only MMO I've really played for a long time is Guild Wars, and you could change the interface around, but all you could do is just move around elements, make this bigger, make that smaller. Well, but
if you shut up for a second, I'll tell you exactly what I was talking about.
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
You're just threatened because I brought up a superior MMO.
Yeah.
Or which is not really an MMO, but a superior gaming experience.
All right. Well, first of all, it ranges from giant changes to very small changes. Like whenever an enemy gets close in the default UI, I think you can have their life bar come up. And it's a very – I think there's a button assigned to either having life bars above enemies' heads when they're at a certain range from you or not having life bars up.
And well, don't forget, a lot of that stuff they didn't add in until after people made it. And alternate forms of the UI.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to make that point that Blizzard has been very intelligent about the entire process because they actually pay attention to what mods are doing with their game. And not mods like moderators, but mods like changes to the game. And if anything is actually a good idea, they will incorporate it, aka steal it, into the very next patch. Like, it'll just be a part of it. They usually don't have as many options as the mod does. It usually doesn't do as great a job, but it's... At least they're trying, and it definitely is nice to not have too many things loaded at once and then have to upgrade your UI every time a new patch comes out and makes everything else obsolete. So the more things they incorporate into the game, the more thankful I am because it means less actual work for me and more just playing. But I know like initially they had no indicators as to when you yourself are taking damage or
stealing aggro.
Yeah, or taking aggro, which is, you know, when the monsters become more interested in you than they are in the current tank, who's the guy that's supposed to be taking all of the damage. Or there's lots of little things that the basic UI never showed you. Now, they could have been on purpose. That could have been a design decision that, hey, we don't want them to know exactly how much threat they have on the enemy. We don't want them to know when they're taking hits of damage and from, you know, and how much. But people are like, no, that's stupid. And they made their own interface where these things do happen. So you can modify the game so that when you're taking damage numbers are flying off your head, and you can even modify how they fly off your head. They can go straight up, they can rainbow arc off your head, like if beads of sweat are flying out of it, instead of little numbers just popping out of you, which is what I had, which is hilarious. But, I mean, there's so many different things. There's the life bars that you see for enemies when they get close to you. The one we use right now, what's that one called? Because it's amazing. Yeah, I guess you guys don't play anymore. I don't know if you were around when we got the new little life bar mod came out.
I don't remember. The last thing I used was Pearl.
No, like I got rid of my...
I've gone through so many life bar mods.
Yeah.
I can probably pull up my old mod
Tiny folder. Bars. I think it's called Tiny Bars.
Yeah, there was that. That one was good.
It's so good. Tiny Plates. Or Tidy Plates?
I think it was Tiny Plates. That reminds me.
Because
yeah,
it makes it... It's like you were saying. If you look at the Blizzard one, it's like... The enemy's name is really big and stupid. Then you have this giant fat bar. It doesn't give you any information aside from health. If you use Tidy Plates or Tiny Plates, it uses a really nice font, a very small bar that looks super classy as a bar can possibly, as a rectangle can fucking look. And then it changes colors depending on different things, including how much threat you're doing to the enemy. So you kind of get an idea of what's going on. And it also, since I'm a Shadow Priest and I put dots up, I put a damage over time spells up, so I have to keep them up. Every enemy that's near me that has this little tidy plate also has a small icon of whatever spells I currently have on it. So I can keep track of multiple things at once without really losing my focus on the main screen, which is the main point of a lot of these UIs. Because if you leave it alone, Blizzard would have your health in the upper left-hand corner. It would have your buffs in the upper right-hand corner. It would have your... I mean, it's just everything would be in very weird places on the screen. And since you're playing a PC game at high resolutions, these are small icons, all very distant from each other. And the main focus of the game is, of course, what's happening in the center of the screen. So what a lot of these do is kind of bring that information up in more natural settings, such as above enemies' heads, above your own head, a little bit to the left of your character, a little bit to the right of your character... just many different ways of making the game a lot more playable.
Well, and the main thing to say about all of these different mods were they're not doing anything that breaks the game. If anything, they were making you more efficient and using scripts that were already happening that you might not have been aware of.
Right.
This segment,
it's all worked out very well.
This segment of the Miserable Podcast of Secrets was brought to you by Tidy Plates. Tidy Plates, improve your World of Warcraft experience.
It is really good. It's one of the best mods I've ever used. I actually got rid of X-Pearl. I got rid of all the big UI changes because Warcraft has caught up as far as
I
I'm concerned.
I got rid of the game, so...
Yeah, that's good. But it's caught up in terms of having your little raid windows open. I mean, I don't want to get into this because then every time I mention something, I have to explain it like from scratch because you guys never played this shit. So I don't even want to get into most of this, but they do a very good job of keeping up with the mod community, and the mod community does an excellent job of making the game better, and it's kind of fed off each other to make a very, very playable game where once it was a kind of clunky experience when it first started. So it's very impressive. And also Blizzard would have just one more thing, like, you have so many abilities, so many different things you can do at any one time. And if you use the default Blizzard UI for this, which I don't anymore, this is one thing I still change. You would have, I believe it's two bars in the lower left, two bars in the lower right, and then two bars on your far right of the screen. I don't think there's anything on the left-hand side of the screen. So you would split up your abilities between all these different places. Now what? And they would be big. They would be kind of big-sized icons. I think... they actually let you scale the UI nowadays. I haven't used the default UI in a while. So thankfully, they do let you do that. They didn't let you do that in previous years. But what I use is Bartender, which basically means I can put the bars wherever I want, however I want, and I set up like a cluster, like a rectangle in the bottom center of my screen that has everything I ever use in like a big clusterfuck kind of that makes sense to me because I set it up from scratch. And most of these things are keybound anyway, which Bartender lets you do very easily. You basically go to keybind, and then you just mouse over whatever ability you want. You press the keyboard button there. You're bound. It's over. And that's what I use right now, and it's fantastic compared to the default UI. I could not – if something broke that particular aspect of the game, the keybindings as well as where the buttons are right in the center of my screen, I would be unable to play the game at this point.
I think...
so used to it.
Yeah, I think a big part of that, like what you were describing with where the bars are located on the screen for life bars, mm-hmm. I think a lot of that just comes down to the difference in necessarily like where the user is sitting. Because I was thinking about that at one point where I was comparing, I think it was like Warcraft, and I was like trying to set up a UI at one point, and I was looking at this other console game I'd been playing and looked at their UI, and what I saw was that in the console game, all the life bars are way off on the edges of the screen like they normally are. But I had no problem with that.
Right.
And then when I played Warcraft, I usually liked all my stuff in the center of the screen. And I think just a big part of that is because when I'm sitting at my TV, I'm like 8 feet away from the
screen.
You
have a big view, yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
And I mean, it's nice to have that kind of customizing. And they are implementing that in more games and in more MMOs and things like that. Like, I don't recall if Guild Wars launched with the ability to resize everything. They might have. But I know that's, like, it's a fairly natural thing in other MMOs I've played. Like, you just hit a button, and your entire screen just turns into windows that you can stretch and move around and resize.
You know what didn't have that, and I found it completely fucking unplayable and garbage because of it, was Final Fantasy XI, the worst MMO ever made. I'm sure it was fun to play on the PlayStation 2. Or if you had a way of using a PlayStation 2 controller on the PC. This is back before the 360 controller came out for me, I think, when I tried it. So I didn't have a 360 Windows controller. And I don't know if it would have supported it back then.
Controller.
But if you try to play the game with a keyboard and mouse, good luck, because it was not designed around it, and it runs like, oh my god, it was so unintuitive, so stupid. You couldn't even use your mouse for most of these things.
Are you in the throes of pleasure over this? Or
no.
It's in the throes of hate.
You couldn't. You had.
Let me throw out one more question to everyone else. What?
Hi, I'm what talking.
No, please interrupt him. Please, he's ranting.
Anyway, whatever. You had to use a controller. You had like menus in menus and sub menus. Just like picking an action in Final Fantasy III, kind of on the console. You know, you would be like attack, fight. Or fight, attack, this spell, like healing spells. It was like sub menus under sub menus, which makes sense with a controller, but when you have everything available to you on the PC, it was so stupid. They just didn't even make an effort to try to make that game a PC game. It was very, very horrible. But anyway, keep going. You can now you can
left.
All right, sorry to interrupt you mid rant. I was just going to ask Jonathan and everyone else. I feel like I've been playing a lot of iOS games, a lot of iPad, a lot of iPad games, and I really like the way a lot of games utilize the touchscreen to elegantly design the user experience. I especially enjoy playing like strategy RPGs and like tactical RPGs on an iPad. Just being able to touch and say exactly where I want something to go, I think is really nice. Do you think that touchscreen interfaces are going to change the way that we play games? Do you see any way in which that's having an effect on game design?
Do you really want to sit that close to the TV?
No, well,
I guess if you have a controller in your lap with a touch screen.
Like the Wii U is going to do certain things, but if you want to take a look right now, you can see some games coming out on the Vita are using both the actual controls and the touchscreen functionality, as well as the back touchpad at the same time to make some interesting effect.
That is, I think it is a transitional device, something like Uncharted on the Vita. I could play with conventional controls, or I could use a touch screen, and I thought for sure I would use the conventional controls, but I found myself more and more, because it's such a more immediate and almost a bit more visceral connection with what you're seeing if you can do it. But the problem is just having it not on the viewing screen, having it in a separate controller in your lap would be okay. I don't like touch screens in a way, because you're blocking out part of the screen with your hand. And that works okay for simpler games, but if you've got a million things that you need to keep track of, if you've got a display that you need to monitor, and it limits where they can place things because they got to accommodate your hand being in the way. So I think it works okay for simpler games, but if you can separate it from the screen, I think it is the wave of the future. It'll open up gaming even more to people that wouldn't game before, if there are such people left.
Yeah, the back touchscreen is a nice concept I wouldn't have thought of. I spent the launch night for the Vita in Japan. I watched a feed pretty much all night long of some dude from some gaming website just playing all these different games while I was jerking off. And one of the things he played was Hot Shots Golf. I forgot the name of it in Japan, but there was this really weird option that you can use your thumb on the touchscreen and use your index finger on the back touch panel. So you're kind of pinching, and you can pick up your character and wave him around and then drop him again. It had no purpose whatsoever. It was just kind of funny. There's just no point
there's no purpose
whatsoever.
To.
But it was just really funny, I thought. So, I don't know.
I recall in Uncharted, you could chuck grenades and projectiles with the back touch screen. Mm-hmm. So while you're running and while you're aiming your gun, you could get ready to throw a grenade, and you can just kind of flick it in the arc that you want, and it's just really effective. So I'm excited that, as I said, I think the Vita is a transitional device in that regard, because it's going to mostly use the buttons for most stuff, I guess. But eventually we'll see some exciting things in that regard. But I want my holiday. I don't know when we're getting the holiday.
As long as things are accurate and they are not delayed. Are my two main problems with inputs. Like as long as these two requirements are met, I'm happy. And motion controls right now meet neither of these requirements. They're neither accurate nor are they timely. They always feel a little delayed, and I'm just not happy with that. Like playing Zelda, even, is probably one of the best motion games out there. It's still not good enough for me. If I'm messing this up, if I feel like it's on the control side and not on my side, even once a game, it's already enough to put me off it. I don't know. So touchscreen seems a little better, but again, I just don't see. I guess we'll have to wait and see what Nintendo does with the Wii U. The Vita is doing shit right now that's pretty impressive, but it's up to the developers to really find innovative ways of using this and not just replacing buttons with a touch, which is, I think, what they're going to do for a while before they start really coming into their own.
I think a big part of the issue that goes on there, and I think the Wii U is pretty much just going to be a kind of continuation of like the iPad, essentially, is that we're missing any kind of a tactile feedback on the touch.
Yeah.
Like if there was some way to implement that, be it like a way to have certain raised sections on the screen so that it could feel like you're pushing a button, they could really start to move past just the current touchscreen interface and be able to do things like have a touchscreen interface and a separate screen that you look at, and be able to recognize where your hand is at all times, as well as being able to play a little bit better directly on the screen and know where the buttons are. Because, I mean, I've played a lot of games
with
controllers, and they tend to suck because of that.
It could be something like an Apple touchpad type of thing where you touch the pad, you use that as your basic mouse, and then you just push it to actually click on it something. So it could maybe be a combination of that, like a clickable screen.
Yeah. Cause, I mean, everyone who I know who has a problem with a touch screen, it's usually because of that tactile feedback. They aren't getting that response that they want. Like, you push something, you expect a click or something to move, and instead it's like you push a touch screen and nothing happens, and you just hope a response comes out, and you hope your hand is in the right spot.
Yeah, the first time I remember, I think it was probably when the DS first came out, and it had Mario 64 as the launch game, and they wanted you to play with the analog stick being emulated on the touchscreen, and it didn't work out at all for me, because you really had trouble just keeping track
of where your thumb was
exactly. Yeah, it was just a really bad idea from the start. Like, you would need some kind of tactile feedback. I really don't know what you can do in regards to that. That seems like, I mean, are people working? Is there any kind of solution to that?
Offhand, I don't know. I mean, my only thought was like actually having the ability to, like, where you would have a screen mapped out and then something underneath it that could actually raise up sections of it, essentially, or, like, mm-hmm. you know, the top of the screen could actually remold itself. But, I mean, I have no idea how they would do it, but I don't think that the touchscreens are really going to replace standard controllers completely until we can get to the point
like
where, yeah. Because it's like, I mean, people are always going to want I know that I've pushed this. I mean, definitely for stuff like Angry Birds, of course, you know, it's like, hey, you drag your finger, you look at what you're doing, that's totally fine.
Well, that's because you're staring at it. With the Wii U, I assume you would be looking at the main screen while using. I just figured it's a console version of a DS, is the way I saw it. Because the DS, you have the main action on the top screen, you have the touch stuff on the bottom screen, and this is just them saying, you know, we got to make a console now. You know, let's make the DS the console, which is you have your TV as your main screen, then you have your controller as your second screen. And I figure they're going to use it in exactly the same ways that you've already been using the DS, except you can put it on the floor and then golf off of it.
I was about to say that.
Which is a stupid, stupid concept. It's a proof of concept that's never going to be anything. You can step up, you can dance on it. I think it's going to be a little dance pad. So you can, no. It's just 1 foot that glows every so often. Step on it. That looked like a proof of concept thing to me. It didn't look like it was going to be a real game or anything. It was just like, wouldn't it be cool if this? And it's like, not really. And they're like, oh, okay.
It'll probably make sniping easier on a controller like that.
Does a controller have the whole you tilt it and things happen, like a motion sensor?
Gyroscope?
Gyroscope things, yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys know if the Wii U controller has gyroscope?
I really don't know. I'm going to assume it does. Let's just say it does, whatever. I'm not a fan of that kind of control, especially on a handheld. Like, having it on the controller is okay, like the PS3 controller, that's kind of neat, you know? I don't want to, it's not accurate enough for me to want to really play with it, but it's a neat idea. I played Flower like that, and I was fine with it, but I don't want my handheld to have motion controls, because I'm looking at the goddamn screen. Like, do you really want me to just wave this shit around while I'm looking at the same screen? And then on top of it, you put in the 3DS, where you need to maintain a locked, like, fixed viewing angle to even see the 3D effects. You want me to, like, tilt this thing around and pretend like I'm Link slingshotting stuff? No. Sorry. It actually works out really well in the 3DS, but you would have to turn the 3D off for that, which I guess I'm okay with.
But was it true? I mean, did someone Nintendo say that they didn't want to add a second analog stick to the system because they felt that, you know, you could move the 3DS around to simulate the second analog stick? Was that, did I just imagine that, or did I really read that?
I never read that in an interview.
I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. I I don't know. I'm not completely sold on the need for a, on the absolute necessity for a second analog stick.
What?
For
the
I am.
Are you serious?
You
need it for gaming in general as
but,
as a.
But did
as
you
a
hear about it?
I don't.
A GameStop exclusive.
You are about
though?
To trigger
a
Monster Hunter.
I know
rant.
That. I don't want to get the Monster Hunter, but I know that I am. I have no plans to buy the analog stick and that giant disgusting looking.
How would Dark Souls? How would Dark Souls play without a second stick? The only game you ever play.
Anyway. Well,
how would that play with without a second analog stick?
Well,
like
that
shit. Like
yeah,
more
you,
shit.
Than you wouldn't be
place.
Able to play that. I mean, I wouldn't expect
okay,
to play
yeah.
it on a 3DS. I mean, but I don't necessarily want to play Dark Souls on a 3DS. Like
yeah,
I want
any other game you want to
different
play.
Different types of games on a 3DS that don't
you know what sucks? No camera control on Skyward Sword. It sucks so much. You have to keep hitting the stupid Z button to make the camera swoop around jarringly to behind Link's back. And, I mean, it's every second. You're like, what's over there? Zoop, zoop. Oh, okay, nothing there. Let me go back to where I was. Zoop, zoop. And you have to hear this fucking zooming noise every time. And it's miserable. It's miserable. It's a miserable thing to have to do. And not having that stick.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if
no, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess had the stick on the GameCube. So, in your face, Chris. But anyway.
But if there's going to be a 3DS Lite, I think they're going to redesign it with the second analog stick. I mean, it's yeah, because that second analog stick attachment is just atrocious.
Do you want to hear the best parts about the analog stick add-on that you may not already know that makes it even better? You may have heard that it requires a battery, a separate battery, and it's a AAA battery, so that's already right. Awesome.
God,
and
good battery life.
At least it's not a watch battery. At least it's not a watch battery. And it's not compatible. It's not just a simple pass-through. It doesn't just have like a plastic pass-through. So when you press a button on it, it pushes the R button on the system itself. It has some kind of weird software thing. So if you were to go from playing, say, Monster Hunter to playing Mario Kart, the R button wouldn't work. You need to take it off to play Mario Kart. I'm not saying keep the thing on all the time, but it's kind of funny that you can't even play games that don't support it. So
yeah,
you would need to remove
it
and put it back on.
It's not something that I see myself needing. I mean, I'm not going to play. I'm probably not going to play Monster Hunter on my 3DS. So
well,
I just want to avoid it as long as possible.
I think Resident Evil is the analog stick title in the U.S.
I don't think it's going to be
Monster Hunter. I think it's going to be Resident Evil.
Ah.
So.
Whatever. Some podcasts we concentrate on the secrets part of this is more the misery part. This
these,
week
these
it's the
miserable,
miserable part.
Yeah.
Miserable not so many secrets this week, but a lot of misery.
Special holiday podcast.
So I think the conclusion we can draw is that if you have things a certain way, like what Capcom had with Marvel versus Capcom with the life bars, you can present new things. It's great, and it might turn out to be better after people get used to it. But it's not a good idea to take things away from people when they're used to it. You just like there's a remixed mode for music and the blue shadows and whatever, you know, you take something out, but there's a menu option to go back to the old way. I think a lot of these things can be avoided as far as sequels. And then I don't know. Do we ever patch like a user interface issue that's significant? Like people are, would they ever patch something in a console game where people are really moaning about it and just add the old life bars? Do you think they would ever do that, or are we just screwed in something like Marvel versus Capcom?
I mean, I don't know how
possible it is to
like
patch
that.
You see, the problem with patching a console game is that you have to go through the certification process through Microsoft and Sony, and that takes a long time. So unless the issue is really jarring and negatively affecting how people play the game, you're not going to see much patches on the console side until they implement a system where they make it easy for developers to actually patch their console games.
Okay.
Well, here, Nelly Furtado, weren't you working on an actual MMO? Can we talk about that or not?
I mean, it depends what you want
to
talk.
Well,
about.
Well, I was wanting to talk about the user interface when it comes
Can
to that
you
game.
Read off all the code.
No, I just meant user interface. If you had anything to do with the interface when it came to that game.
Not
Not really.
Not particularly. I don't have. I have dealt with some UI stuff, but it's more along the lines of, you know, fix this so that this doesn't appear because of, you know, some bug in the code. But
that's a UI expert, everyone. That's the guy we brought on. I'm just kidding. But yeah. I don't know. Like, I really don't. I can't think of a console game where the UI has been so prohibitive that it's really kept me from playing the game. I've definitely thought that some things have been stupid decisions, but what can you do? You just get used to it, or you don't play the game, I guess. So I've never really.
Resident Evil is my big example.
It's because I played the original right when it came out, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. Like, I think it was just
if you don't know any better, then you're not going to think, oh, hey, this could be done better. But if you try to go back and play it, you can see it. The same way.
Right. I think now people are making more efforts towards a more cinematic, cohesive experience, more of a seamless experience. And back then, there were many tropes that were kind of video gamey, where you're like, oh, that's a video gamey thing. That's just a video game thing. And
I think part of the problem for me is I happened to play it in 1999. I played it right after I finished Metal Gear Solid, which has great controls, and that makes sense to me anyway. And it just seems so backward and so foreign after playing such a well-designed game like Metal Gear Solid that I couldn't even begin to play it.
After plugging your controller into port 2, Resident Evil was just not good enough anymore.
yeah, I just couldn't do it.
It's no good. I can't do it.
I don't know. I think Resident Evil 1 was my first PlayStation game. I got the PlayStation and I got Resident Evil 1 at the same time. And I that's just what I knew from the start, so maybe it didn't seem that foreign to me. And if it were to come out right now with that exact same interface, it would be very annoying. But I just honestly never even gave it a second thought. It's just like, that's just the way it is. And I think I that's how I feel about most console games. It's just, that's just the way it is. Because there really is no alternative. There's no one really showing you, hey, try this. Maybe this is a better way to controlling the game. And you're like, oh my god, you're right. Like there is on the PC, which I think is a big part of PC gaming. The tinkering, you know, the constant changing, tinkering, moving things around, that's a big PC game thing. That's just never present on consoles.
Shall we move into our ho-ho holiday edition of what we've been playing?
I think so.
Shall we start with Jonathan? Jonathan, let's start with you, our special guest.
So I actually played three games. The first was, and I referred to earlier, was Bastion. Finished it last night, and for the $5 that I paid, it was definitely well worth it.
How long did it take you to finish?
According to Steam, it said about 9 hours. I did do a little grinding. There's some sections where it's, I forget what it's called, but it like goes over the backstories of some of the characters in the game. But I primarily did A because I wanted to test out some of the different weapons. B, I needed the more experience points. And C, it still was a lot of fun to just like go in and just start messing with all the enemies, especially in the Bastion game. There are these gods that basically they're like difficulty modifiers. They're like skulls in the Halo game, which makes the game harder. So you can go through those sections with more and more of these idols invoked, and it grants you more experience points. So, Bastion. If you see it on sale, is it worth it? $15? Probably. I mean, it's a short experience, but there's no filler in there. So,
I didn't realize the game was that short, but if it's a good 9 hours for $5, that's a good buy.
And there is a new game plus as well, and you certainly aren't going to find everything in your first playthrough. So I'm definitely going to go through the new game plus. I haven't played it yet, but supposedly you have all the weapon upgrades that you did are still in there. And that was the other great thing about Bastion is that every level they always throw like something new, like they give you a new weapon for you to try out. So there's there's no, like, dull moments into the game. It's always go to this new level, and, you know, you might encounter a new enemy, and here's this cool weapon. Oh, you got this flamethrower thing. Awesome. And, you know, it's just, like, stuff. It just keeps throwing more and more stuff at you. So, Bastion, definitely recommend it, especially if it's on sale again during the Steam holiday sale. Although I know, Mizzle, you talked about it, that's more of a game that you would prefer to play on the big screen TV than the computer, right?
Bastion? Yeah, it definitely is. I don't know what my criteria are for that anymore. The lines have been blurring heavily the last few years, but Bastion, for me, still firmly feels like a console game. Even though I could play it on the PC with my 360 controller, and it would probably be exactly the same. But for me, I would prefer that on the console. I don't really know why anymore.
It wasn't that big of an issue for me. I just hooked up. I have the wireless Microsoft wireless dongle receiver, so you can actually use the 360 wireless controller. So it's fine either way, because it's I'd rather pay $5 than $15. So, but
I understand. But,
so that was one of the games I played. The other game I just actually finished earlier today was Portal 2 co-op. So I had a chance to go through the co-op missions with a friend. We were playing it on and off for like a few weeks, and we just finished it today. And
nice.
Definitely an enjoyable experience.
I still need to go through that. I need to find someone to go through that with me.
And I love Portal 2. I think they were a little too tame with it. They didn't really. I figured the difficulty would ramp up at a certain point, and it never kind of did. So in a way, it was good because it was a very steady increase in difficulty, and it just kind of never really ramped or never really went up. But then again, I never felt like I was challenged by the game. I mean, like mentally, sure, I had to figure out the puzzles, but there was never a point where I was like, I need to run and jump and do this in a very quick manner or else I won't be able to do it. And I don't know. I mean, you die, you come back right away. There's no reason not to challenge a player in a game like that. I just don't understand their...
The only explanation would be that they did release Orange Box in the 360, so there's not that excuse. It's like, well, it's on the console, so you can't do all these crazy actions. Yeah. But
well, that could be part of it. I think it's too much playtesting. I think as you bring in too many people, I mean, I guess if there is a thing as too much playtesting, you bring in too many people complain about how hard it is, you end up toning it down a little bit too much to kind of appease every single demographic. When honestly, the more people play your game, the better they will be at it. And I think requiring a little bit of practice to be able to do some of the end game stuff is not unheard of, especially if you're sitting there playing a game for the last 10 hours, 12 hours. You're going to be significantly better at that game by the time you're done than when you started. So
right,
I think it's fair to ramp up the difficulty. And if someone just comes in and tries it out and they're like, it's too hard, I couldn't make the jump, it's like, you know what? Put in a couple of weeks worth of playtime and maybe then you will be able to make the jump. But you don't really, you know, it's just too much focus testing, I think, is the way I feel about it. Not sure if it's true or not. I'm just irascible and old.
It's definitely
a good point, yeah.
It's a good point. I don't think there were any levels that, you know, like was frustratingly difficult. I mean, there were a few that you had to like go through, there was one where you had, it was kind of like a, not a maze, but it was just like a very complex sequences that you needed with the funnel in order to get through. And if you're not careful, you fall into the spikes, and there was timing involved, and you really need to rely on your co-op partner and good communication skills that you needed to get through.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I could definitely see that but there weren't anything that was like, man, this is really hard. But otherwise, it was a good extension of the Portal 2 story. GLaDOS and some very funny things, and overall a very enjoyable experience. And the third game that I played, actually it played a little bit, was Beyond Good and Evil HD. I don't know if it's because it was Ubisoft's fault or whatever, but I didn't get far, but when I tried saving my game, I couldn't, and I think the game thought that I was still in trial mode, even though I paid for the game, because when I got to the main menu screen, and I don't know, maybe you could tell me this, is that Does the option to unlock the full game still appear if you've already paid for the game?
No.
Okay.
No, it does
it
not.
It shouldn't. No.
All right. So then, fortunately, I didn't get far, but like I couldn't save the game after playing for about half an hour, an hour. I mean, part of it was just like looking around the environments and such, but I'll probably get back into it. Hopefully, maybe over the holiday break, we'll see. But so far, I mean, I am in the mindset like, okay, this game was made back in 2000.
Yeah, you need to have that, I think.
So like with that frame of reference, I'm like, okay, I see what they were trying to do, and I mean, I'm still interested in the world, so I'm hopefully the save bug will be resolved the next time I boot it up, and then I can play the game properly.
Well, did you buy it? Are you playing on the console where you purchased it?
I played it on the Xbox Live Arcade, like back when, what was it? It was this Cyber Monday sale where it was like for $3. I'm like,
I only ever had problems with one game, and that was Braid, where it thought that I didn't buy it, but I had bought it. Braid was kind of being a little bitch about it, but that's the only game, and I think that was just because I purchased it on a different console, and then I didn't switch the license over. That's the only time I've ever really had an issue with that kind of thing.
I think what happened was that I downloaded it, and then the download got interrupted, and then when it resumed, there was some issue. I don't know. I'll have to look back into it. But regarding games, if you sell anything for $5 or less, more than likely, even if I have a remote interest, I'll throw money at it and get it. So Beyond Good and Evil definitely fit that criteria.
Yeah, keep that in mind.
Dead Space.
That's right. I guess I'll go next. I've been playing a bunch of 3DS games this week, partly because of the a bunch of the Game Boy Advance Ambassador games were finally made available this week. So those of you who have not downloaded them yet should go out and download them. I've been playing WarioWare, the original WarioWare, which Nintendo smartly included among the ambassador downloads. It's still a really great game. I still really enjoy especially playing at, you know, the higher levels, some of the games that you unlock. You know, once you beat all the different challenges where they throw them all at you really fast. It's such a great, clever little game, and it's sort of one of those games that sort of predicted the success of the super casual iOS game market that Nintendo's having such a difficult time competing with now. A lot of these like Angry Birds type of games are all sort of modeled after the very simple casual games that came out of WarioWare. That, you know, ironically, Nintendo made all this money on these WarioWare games, and now they're having problems, you know, finding their place in the market because that type of gaming was so successful. But yeah, it's just a really simple game, really great to pick up. And just play around with whenever you have a few minutes, and so I really enjoy that. I also started playing Shinobi again for the 3DS. Still a pretty good game. I still think it's, you know, very very heavily skill based, and you know it's a difficult game but fair. And I definitely appreciate that about it. I went back to some of the old level, higher scores, because it's, you know, when you play through the regular game and you do score attack, it keeps score and it grades your performance on each level. So there's a lot of replay incentive, and the game even includes its own achievements that you unlock, and you can unlock cheats and special costumes as you get through the game. So, you know, it just underscores the fact that, you know, Nintendo really needs to add some kind of achievement, universal achievement system for all of its games. So I hope that they do that. I think Shinobi is a good example of a game that does that really well. So it's definitely having fun with that. I was also playing a couple iOS games. I was playing one of my favorites is Pix and Love Rush. I don't know if any of you played this.
What's it called?
It's called Pix and Love, like N apostrophe Love Rush.
I see.
It's a really simple game. Kind of almost reminds me of Super Meat Boy in a way, and that the it's an iOS based game, but the controls are very, very tight, and it requires a lot of precision in order to get good scores. Basically, what it is, it's four different mini games all put together. They're all based on platforming. Like the main game is kind of like a 5-minute rush, where you try to score as many points as you can. Basically, you try to pick up items, you try to shoot little bats, and you try to avoid little angels, and just try to score as many points in 5 minutes as possible. I mean, it's kind of hard to describe, but the graphics are really good. Like, they're very like old school, like handheld base. They have that kind of feel to them. It's sort of like, and as you score points, the backgrounds change. It's sort of like it's almost like a history through handheld gaming. Like as the backgrounds develop, it's really nicely well. I think it's only 99 cents too. It's definitely something that anybody who's interested in iOS games should definitely have. It's one of like three iOS games that I play consistently. The other two being like Dungeon Raid and League of Evil. So yeah, it's definitely one of my top three iOS games. And still playing Dark Souls. I started up yet another new character, and I sort of focused it towards co-op. Basically, I joined the covenant in the game that gives you benefits by helping other players, and one of the things I was really having fun with was exploring the multiplayer aspect of the game and just marveling at how well it's done. I mean, a couple weeks ago I sort of criticized the way that Dark Souls doesn't allow you to hook up with specific people. It's not really designed that way, but the way in which it works is it's just very unique and works very well. And just the whole idea of you using these bonfires to meet up with people and find other people to join your game, it's so uniquely community oriented in no other way that I haven't played many MMOs, so I can't really compare it to that, but it's just very cleverly designed, and I really enjoy that. And sort of thinking about it this week, and one of the reasons why the game is really connected with me is the idea of choices. The game doesn't allow you to save. It doesn't allow you to quick save. I mean, it auto saves periodically, and of course, every time you go to a bonfire, you effectively save your game. But I really like games that force you to make choices. And one of the reasons why I liked Deus Ex Human Revolution is because it goes back to that idea of forcing you to decide what kind of decisions to make and how to level up your character. Like, everything you do in Dark Souls has a consequence. Like, you can't just play every single quest and find every single weapon and do everything on your first playthrough. It's just impossible. Like, you can't do it that way. Like, that's one of the reasons why I don't like games like Skyrim. Like, I mean, it's got all these different quest lines that you can do, but you can basically, it seems to me like you don't effectively have to make choices. Like, you can do the mage quest, you can do the thief quest, you can do like all these like good quests, evil quests. It seems like you just do everything your first time through the game, and it doesn't like impose this sense of consequences on you in the game world. And
you're looking at broader consequences there. It's mostly like a lot of those games, a lot of the Western RPGs, they don't block off other quests. It's about the choices you make during that quest, which can end up killing people who would then offer you other quests.
That's something. I mean, that's something, I guess, that you point to. But like, I like the idea of like, choosing whether to do the good quests or the evil quests, and just like being forced to make some kind of decision on what you choose to do and how that impacts your game character. And Dark Souls really does force you to do that. Like, are like around every corner. You have to make a choice. Like, are you going to try to open up that chest, or are you going to back away from it? You know, because it might turn into a mimic and devour you. Like,
I think I'm going to open the chest. I just made a.
Are you going to pick up that sword?
Yeah, or are you going to go?
This is a surgery sim you're talking about.
So, like, are you going to go beyond that door and risk?
Insurance. I get it.
And risk what might be inside there.
Sequel to a trauma center.
But yeah, I like the idea of choices. I like the way the game forces it on you.
Yeah, I wish a game would do that, because yeah, I'm the kind of guy that goes back and makes sure he does every quest. It would be interesting to just totally be shut off from that. And I guess some games have done that, but you never really feel like you're missing something. But it would be interesting if you did have to commit to just – it would bring you into the character more if you had to commit to saying this will actually have consequences. I can't just go and undo it and reload my last save, or go back and talk to the guy three times, and then the third time he'll say the same thing again and I can make a different choice. So that sounds very good.
Yeah, so it's I like it anyway. Chris, what have you been playing?
Well, I've pretty much just been playing two things this week, so I was working on finals and stuff. One of them is To the Moon, which is an indie game that's pretty much just a visual novel. The gameplay is almost completely non-existent. It's like a point-and-click adventure. You're just kind of steering to hotspots and doing really simplistic puzzles every once in a while. And I'll kind of start off with more of the bad stuff, which is that, number one, you're not really playing much of a game. And number two, a lot of the dialogue is kind of forced, especially with the scientists whose point of view it is that you as the player are going through. Their dialogue is not very good, and like often stilted, kind of awkward, interrupts at weird times and things like that. But as a visual novel game, it was otherwise just fantastic for me. The story for it is really good, and they actually managed to pull off the execution of that story really well. I played through the whole thing in one sitting. I don't know how long it took me. It's like 5 or 6 hours long. And it was fantastic. It started off, I mean, it was pretty much paced like a movie. It started off a little bit slow, it took a while to get going, and then eventually, like, you hit the climax, and it just sort of builds from there, and overall, it was, like, once they really started into the later sections of the game, it really got to me. And it's, I have bad things to say about it, but really overall, it was just completely worth it. I would highly recommend it to anyone who has any kind of interest in
discussing
time travel stories or, you know, like any kind of like memory alteration stuff. Like, it's a really great concept, and they did a good job with the story. The writing could definitely stand to be patched up, and from the way that they handled part of the ending, I think they want this to be a kind of episodic thing. And I mean, the storyline is pretty much like, you know, there are these scientists who reconstruct people's memories when they're on their deathbed to try and give them a happy life. So it's easy for them to be able to write more sections to it. But they're going to have to do a really good job, because part of what was interesting was just the basic idea and watching the execution of them going through and redoing this person's life. So for them to have to try and do that a second time, they're going to have to do a really good job, because the novelty of the idea itself is going to be gone. You know, it'd be like having a sequel to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I was going
to
say, damn you.
Right.
I played it for a hot second, and I kind of felt like it was definitely very similar to Eternal Sunshine, just in concept, maybe kind of the reverse of what they did in that movie. But
what is the
similar
art style like? Is this a?
It's RPG Maker.
Yeah.
The art style.
Yeah, they made it an RPG Maker, so it looks like a Super Nintendo role playing game.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I mean they did a good job with what they had to work with there. So hopefully they're able to keep going with that. I don't really know what their plans are. They've done a couple other things before, and I think this might be their first their first pay game. But yeah, it's pretty good, and they seem to be really cool people. Like, I was on their forums, and someone brought up a bunch of, you know, legitimate complaints, and actually wrote out his ideas for why he complained, and the developers were like, oh, okay, well, just tell us, you know, like, what your credit card number was, like, PM it to us, and we'll go ahead and refund your money. And the guy turned it down, because he was like, no, I want to support you guys, and I like supporting the indie scene, but I just thought that was pretty cool of them to be like, oh, well, you had legitimate complaints? We're sorry to hear that. Here you go.
Yeah, that, like, was a little bit, like, it felt like a little bit like 90s working design a little bit sometimes. Yeah, I guess it was kind of like a, not generic, but kind of like a little bit of the lame kind of PlayStation RPG translations that you kind of got used to with the little jokes and stuff. I mean, I didn't get very far again, so I'm sure the story gets very, very good and very charming and everything. But from what I played, it was just a little, I'll keep playing, you know, no complaints.
Yeah.
But.
The scientist, especially the male guy, he does, like, nerd jokes.
He's an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to be him, so I picked the girl because I did not want to be that guy.
You should.
Because he was so stupid.
Yeah, the girl's better. And the girl just makes fun of him, too. Because, you know, they're terrible kind of off-putting things. Like, he makes a Dragon Ball joke at one point. He makes a... I don't remember what all of them were. But each time he talks, it's just like, oh, God. Just stop. It's just terrible pop culture stuff. So, yeah. And then the other thing I've been playing this month is simply because, you know, I haven't had enough Korean MMOs in my life, so I've been playing Dragon Nest again.
Oh, my God.
Love it. Love it. It's still a lot of fun. I love that game. It's a lot better than it should be. They do handle the cash shop a little shitty, but you don't have to go into the cash shop, which I do like about a lot of those games.
This is a Nexon game, right?
Yeah.
Nexon? Yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones who are handling the North American release for it. And they do have their usual shenanigans, like when they're supposed to have maintenance for a day, it always takes at least twice the normal, like, scheduled 8 hours. They're like, oh, yeah, well, they've actually gotten to the point where instead of saying maintenance today, we'll go from, you know, 7 to 8 or whatever, it will go maintenance today, we'll start at 7, and we'll give you an update at 8. For where we stand, because they tried actually announcing times the first few times that they would update, and they were always like, oh, we're finding other problems with the game, and it would still be down for like 6 more hours, and they would get slammed with that. But they've increased the level cap a couple times now, so characters are actually able to get into the interesting skills and more fun, tougher levels, so it's really good, and I'm having a blast with that. I love it. I love it so much. You should play it.
What Never. Really makes it? What? Why do you love it so much? What differentiates it from?
Well, one of the main things is because it's an action game. Like, it actually gives you full control. So you've got that kind of, you know, that Diablo Guild Wars sort of layout where you have your hub city, and then you can pair up with people and go out and run dungeons. But it's a third person view. You aim with the mouse. Which, you know, doesn't necessarily matter as much if you're wielding a sword, but that's still how you turn. Like, you turn as though it's, you know, just a normal third-person shooter. And that comes into big play when you're using, like, the sorceress or the archer, because, you know, they're ranged classes, obviously. And it's completely about, like, combos, building combos, you load up your skills. And, because for me, one of the big attractions for it is actually, and this will sound silly, is the solo aspect of the multiplayer game. Because I like building up the character and then being able to take down areas that are designed to have 4 people in them. And there's a lot of customization that goes on within that in terms of how you create a layout for your character and what combos you'll have access to. But it's really fast, and just, it's really smooth, plays great. It's, I mean, definitely better. Like, the only open world MMO that I can think of which actually tries to do that action is Terra Online, which isn't out in the US yet, but I have played it. And the main thing is that it's a lot slower than something like Dragon Nest. Dragon Nest is, you know, self-contained small dungeons, which means that they can rely on you having a very low ping. And so it moves really quickly, whereas Terra Online is, they're a little bit slower in a lot of their animations, and it is hitbox reliant in both games. But the other one is like, you know, you may have 30 people in one location show up and kill shit, so responds a little bit behind. So, but yeah, you should play with us, Nick.
Do you play with Ryan? Well, I always, you know, dick around here and there with MMOs, and I never go far. I guess I'm just not a team person. I said before on the show, I'm not reliable. This week I've been playing War of the Immortals, which is a Perfect World game. And I just don't want to team up with anybody. I just want to take my character in. I mean, if I know people, but then we get into that area again where I play so sporadically that I don't feel like getting a team together, because I'm the guy that never shows up. And they're like,
Nick, you gotta try Dark Souls, man. It's great because you don't have to you don't have to make plans with anybody. If you need to team up with somebody, you just turn into a human and you summon someone out. And then they go away when you're done. You know, it's the perfect
one night stand.
Team
like
up.
Paying for a prostitute.
Yeah, it's a one night exactly. Yeah, it works out great.
You can do. I mean, you can do the whole single player thing in Dragon Nest. Like only the kind of there are areas which are actually called nests, which are basically only hard difficulty, and lots of like the toughest enemies will be thrown at you at once. And they're designed for groups. Outside of those, and even those can eventually be soloed by characters. But outside of that, you can play like the entire game solo if you want, and just team up with people once in a while when you feel like it.
To me, the perfect solution, and this is why I played the game so much again, was Guild Wars, because when the Nightfall version, their expansion pack or whatever it was, when Nightfall came out, you had computer heroes that you could customize. It was like you had your own group of the maximum number of players you could have usually was 8, but you could have 3 other, as I recall, computer-controlled heroes, and you could tweak the AI, you could tweak what weapons they have, you could take them over whenever you needed to, you could have them cast spells a certain way, you could disable some spells so they wouldn't cast it. So it was like you could play these difficult areas that would normally take 3 or 4 people to take down a boss, or you don't have to play it, you don't have to be 4 times as good as anybody else to solo it. You could bring in your own computer-controlled heroes, or you could bring in real people. If more MMOs did that, and I don't know if they do, because the ones I've played haven't done that, but if more games gave you that option, I think I'd probably spend a lot more time on the PC playing these games. But that's the social aspect is really what is really good about these games, but it's what keeps me from getting into them more, because I just I play so unpredictably that I feel nobody really wants me on their team because I'm not going to be there tomorrow.
That is true.
And I've ever had to anything besides TNL.
I mean, there's definitely games that are very heavily group dependent. I mean, stuff like Warcraft and EverQuest, and you know, Final Fantasy XI and things like that. Like, it becomes group dependent. Like much in some of those games, not till you get to the end game. And Final Fantasy XI, pretty much the entire time you're playing. But it is that sort of thing of where you need to be consistent at some point. Usually the smaller scale stuff, not so much. In terms of having AI companions, like, there aren't too many open world MMOs I can think of that do that. Prius Online had something basic, which it wasn't like a secondary player, but you basically got this sidekick who you could send out to pick up items for you, and they would, you know, it was like this little person who you could cultivate, and they would eventually end up casting, like, healing spells or buff spells on your character, and, like, as you were walking past plants and places to mine, they would go and gather your materials for you. It was like having a little slave that was, you know, an 8-year-old girl.
Sounds perfect.
And then I...
Mizzo, calm down.
Right?
All right, no.
And then
I
think they took that and they took that a little bit farther in Star Wars: The Old Republic. Like, you got, you know, a slave or partner in that game as well, which is pretty much the same thing. Like, you could send them out and they would go and gather for you, and they would help you out, in battles and stuff.
And that's interesting. Listen up, Jonathan, if you have any input into this, because you do have these quests in these MMOs where you have to accompany someone, and while you accompany them, or while they accompany you, while you're taking them to wherever they need to go, sometimes they'll cast magic, they'll fight at your side, or you'll get into part of the story where you're helping an army out, and all these people are your allies, and they're fighting independently of you. You know, the computer's controlling them, fighting the monsters. So, I mean, if you could just take that AI or that programming and just give people the option of not playing with, you know, if you try to put a team together and all you're finding are idiots or people that drop out after a few minutes, that you have the option to say, you know, tonight it's not working out with the pickup groups, not, you know, nobody's on that I know, I'm going to get three or four computer controlled allies and we're going to go after that boss. You know, I'm not going to sit here and wait around until I have the perfect team. I think that would help a lot of people to play more consistently if they had that option to do that.
You know, you have a little cat helper in Monster Hunter who hunts with you.
If the all games could be more like Monster Hunter.
So you know.
it's something to definitely consider. There's a lot of technical reasons why you don't see that in a lot of games, because in addition to constructing like the AI for the characters, there's also pathfinding, like getting the characters from point A to B. But it's definitely something to suggest to be included into the game. And it does what you said about not being able to play in groups. It was something interesting that I was told about by a game professor of mine as to why World of Warcraft was popular in the first place. And part of the reason was that you could complete most of the game on your own. Like, you could conceivably solo the game. Like, you would think, like, MMORPG, oh, in order to play this game, you have to participate in a large group. And I think the reason why WoW was so successful is that you had the option, like, if you didn't want to participate in a large group, you weren't necessarily penalized for it. You could access most of the content of the game in there because you didn't have to rely on joining a guild with like 3, 4, 10, or 20 other people in there. So
I end up going in and I'll check the forums, like War of the Immortals. I'll check the forums because War of the Immortals had on the character select screen had no information about what the differences were. You knew this guy cast magic. You knew this guy used clubs and swords. You kind of knew the basics, but you didn't know what kinds of. There was no description. There was nothing. Not even like this guy fights for evil. This guy fights for himself. There's nothing. And sometimes you get in there, and if you're not careful, there are characters, at least in the ones I've played, where you just don't want that character if you're trying to solo the game, you know. So you'll have to. Sometimes you'll say, well, I'll just pick the barbarian or the big buff guy. He'll probably be able to handle it. And then you find out, no, actually, in this particular game, you know, you want to get the enchantress or whoever because that's the really powerful character. So if you have a situation where you can pick any character you want. It's like, I like being a magic user. I like being a melee character. And then I can add computer-controlled characters to complement my character. That would be a really sweet spot. So I hope we do see more of that in the future.
Because you know what else I would like for Protect Missions? An option to turn off the AI and just have them sit behind a wall and wait for me to clear everything else out instead of walking into enemy attacks and getting themselves killed. That would be fantastic. Tactics Ogre, that would solve like half the game right there.
Yeah, that would be great if Tactics Ogre would do that. Yeah.
Protect this character. Okay, what do they do in their first round? Oh, let's see. They don't have any armor.
They can't just hurt. They go find
the waiting arms.
Run over to the enemy front and get, oh, Jesus Christ.
I've got protection. I don't need to be scared of you anymore. I'll just come right up and hit you on the head.
Like, I remember the first game that did that to me was Tactics, Final Fantasy Tactics. It's like, protect Mustadio, and then he jumps into a group of fucking magicians, and he's just shooting them with his inefficient shots.
Yes.
You're like, you stupid idiot. Get behind the wall. Get behind the wall.
Yeah, in Phantasy Star Online too, there was some protect mission where the guy would just run with all he was worth into the jaws of death, just assuming that you would somehow dispatch all the other enemies and just get to the enemy that was about to hit him. Yeah, so yeah, I see that there is a problem, but hopefully we can get those things ironed out. And yeah, MMOs are getting pretty impressive, so I have a lot of faith in that.
I think did we talk to Mizzo? Did we already talk to about what Mizzo's been playing?
Mizzo, tell us about Monster Hunter.
Mizzo is still playing Monster Hunter on the PlayStation Portable. And again, to specify, this is the very first Monster Hunter. It's the G version of the original PlayStation 2, but it's still the worst one of all. It has the least amount of polish to it. It's just not. It's a very rough game, but I am very close to being done. I know I say that every week, but I swear that this week I am very close to being done. There are literally like 3 quests left, and if I finish these 3 quests, then I will have completed every quest in the game.
Or you just reset the game when you're about to win because you just can't give it up. You know?
No, but there's no need to give it up because then I'll just go right. I'm going to import my character into Monster Freedom 2, which I own, and then I will immediately import this character into Monster Freedom Unite.
You know, because we need to get the DSM-4 in here or something and see what this mental condition is called. This is pretty scary.
Because you can't import your character from Freedom 1 into Freedom Unite. So I need to import it into 2 and then import that into Freedom Unite. Although my character won't even look the same because they give you so many new character options. I've already turned it on just to look at the character creation screen. It's so much better than it was at the beginning, so I'm making a completely different kind of girl. Much better than the first one I made, so it's just basically going to keep my money, which is actually pretty good because I have a lot of Zenny in the first game, so keeping that into the later game is going to help.
If it's a girl that lets you keep your money, it is a very completely different type of girl. Very good.
And I also just started playing Monster Hunter Tri on the Wii because somebody just bought it for me for Christmas. And my friend John, and he got it himself. So I'm going to start a big campaign on TNL to try to... I know people... I found the thread for Try on TNL, and people... TNL being the next level, for those of you not in the know. And some people did buy Try when it came out, and they tried to play it. But they found that the biggest issue was to make a friend online. You both had to be online. And I believe on the same server, like on the same kind of room at the same time in order to become friends with that person. So you have to find a way to communicate with this person before you ever could communicate in the game. And then set that up, which, I mean, that's not a huge hurdle to overcome considering that's on the freaking Wii. But once you set that up, you can play online.
Is it a two-player game?
Four-player. It's like PSO. I mean, it's basically a really dirty, fancy PSO.
As I told you before, I personally bought Try for 2 people on the Next Level forums. So yes. I'm trying to get you to not be on the podcast anymore. So I'm trying to fill up every waking moment.
Well, I spent this entire podcast playing Monster Hunter Try, just so you guys know. It didn't really affect it negatively. At least I don't feel like it did. It may have, but
it's not very effective.
It's super effective.
Anyway, it's the Wii version is definitely different. It's a bit more polished, a bit more friendly. There's more of a story to it, and the tutorial goes on for a lot longer. It's not even a tutorial, it's just the game, but there's people talking to you and telling you what to do, which is already vastly different from the last game. Because before, it was just like, you start in town, you're like, want to kill some monsters? Cool, you know, do it. And nobody tells you anything, and you're just kind of... You have to either figure things out or go on forums and try to get people to help you out. And once you learn the game, it becomes a very different game. And as the game goes on, it also becomes a very different game from what it started. And jumping into the Wii one,
it's very Dark Souls-esque.
It really is. It's from the same school of game design, which is basically fuck you. You know,
they don't
tell you anything. You just kind of figure things out. You can combine these things. Some of the combinations don't really make sense, but I don't know. It's more about coming to the hunt prepared, bringing all these. If you're having trouble, if you're good enough, you can get through anything with just your basics. But if you're having trouble, you can really hunker down and prepare to bring a monster down and have a lot of items to back you up. Traps, you know, different stunning things. I mean, it works pretty well. And every monster is basically a boss fight in any other game. They all have their patterns. They all have their way they react. And they all have their tells or what they're going to do next. So once you pick up on those things, it becomes fairly easy. But the very first time you fight something, they're just making all these – they're moving around all crazy, and they're doing these things that are hitting you for a million, and you're dying. And they have no health bars, and it takes like 1,000 years just to cut them down and finally kill them. It's very not friendly, but I'm sure I've said the same thing about this game 100 times now, so I'm not going to bother anyone else with it. But Try is the same game. It's still Monster Hunter, undeniably Monster Hunter. Yes. There's nothing specifically – it didn't change the game in any significant way. It didn't make it a much better game all of a sudden. It's the same game. If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you're not going to hate it. But you really – it's an acquired taste, and you need to sink a few hours into it before it even becomes the game it's going to be. Because at first you're just hunting.
So it's at the same resolution as the PSP.
Oh my god! You know what? It looks like shit. I'm sorry. It looks like shit. The words are fuzzy. It's not very nice. I mean, am I supposed to be playing this on an SD TV? I don't understand. But it did do one of those things where, have you ever had those moments where you play a game series kind of that reuses icons for items or spells or abilities? And you've been staring at an icon for, I don't know how long, actually for 268 hours on the PSP, and you actually don't know what the icon is. You have no idea what the icon is at all. And then you see it on a big screen, and you're like, oh. And that happened in Monster Hunter. A lot of the items have the same icon, they're just different colors. And apparently all along this icon was kind of a fat dragon with little tiny wings coming out of the top. And his head is kind of in front of the big fat body, and he's kind of asleep. And I really just had no idea what that was supposed to be on the PSP. I thought it was just some weird little graphic. And when it's bones, when you pick up bones, it's a little skeleton dragon in the same pose. No idea. I thought it was just like a mess of lines and shit. I'm like, yeah, that's a bone. Whatever. But that was kind of neat.
On a semi-related note, which isn't. Because I've had that experience, but I've looked at icons for a long time in an RPG, and I suddenly realize it's crystal clear what it is. I was over at my brother's yesterday, and Saturday Night Live came on, and it was hosted by Jimmy Fallon. So they brought back a bunch of old people that used to be on the cast. So this entire sketch, I thought that the black guy in the sketch was Keenan, whatever. The Keenan guy is.
Keenan Thompson.
It was Tracy Morgan the whole... This is how unobservant I am. I'm looking at the screen.
They all look the same to you.
They all look the same.
That's all right.
It was the Christmas song one where he was just kind of moving around.
Because Keenan hadn't been on at that point, and I think he's a funny guy. I think he's really funny on that show whenever I watch it. So I said, oh, finally, they put Keenan in a sketch, and my brother said, I hope you're joking. And I no-sold it. I didn't even pay attention to that. I didn't know what he's talking about. And then later on, Keenan came on, and my brother said, oh, there's finally Keenan. I said, no, Keenan was in the other sketch. And we just had this argument, and yeah, it was Tracy Morgan. I don't know.
Like,
so,
I'm talking about video game icons. You're talking about black icons.
But yeah, you could be looking at something for such a long time, and it just doesn't click sometimes.
Wow.
And this is why I'm bad at video games.
He was on that Nickelodeon show.
Yes.
Isn't there a vast difference in weight as well as facial appearance?
Well, I don't know. Tracy looks kind of fat.
Is Tracy getting up there? Because
Tracy's getting kind
of fat. Oh, no. Well, Keenan lost a lot of weight, and Tracy looked like
so they met in the middle, basically.
I guess.
They met in the middle.
Yeah, okay.
We're totally not talking about video games either.
I just had to share that with somebody.
So, Nick, I guess, Nick, you've already told us what you've been playing.
I just played a little bit of War of the Immortals.
Also played Super Racist 2000 Deluxe.
Hang on a second. Hang on. We're going to edit this out. I have a cat that just jumped.
Hold on. Yeah, a cat.
No, don't bring a cat to pretend.
Can't have any cats on.
It's a black cat, so I don't know if it's my cat or if it's a cat that's just entered in.
It could be a new cat.
There's so many places I could go.
All right, let's pause.
That was the last podcast we ever had.
Let's pause for a second and edit this. Put a cut point in.
Came out.
Yeah, of course I own a black cat. It's got a chain around its neck.
Some of his best friends are black cats.
It's got little shackles on each.
These allegations are baseless.
You can't just ask somebody why they own a black cat.
So I've been playing. I played a little bit of War of the Immortals, which seems to be your typical MMO that I've seen. That I always see at E3, and that I play from time to time. But yeah, it's not nothing I really want to talk about at the moment because I'm just kind of getting into it. I guess you have Norse god type characters. You start out in some storyline involving the death of Odin, and I think you go to Atlantis. Or I've gone to Atlantis so far, so I guess different gods from different mythological lines are involved. And you just walk around and you hit things with your weapon. And it's got interesting ways to keep you playing. I don't know if they do this in other games, but you've got this little pop-up that says, if you play for 20 more minutes, you'll get this prize. And then you play for 20 minutes and you get a little item. And then if you play for another hour, you'll get this prize. And then you get a salary every day. If you play a minimum of 2 hours a day, they'll give you a certain amount of gold, and it's just ways to keep you playing it. But I think after 2 hours, the incentive stops. So I think they don't want people totally vegging out in front of this thing. But it's just your average point and click kind of thing so far, but we'll see where it goes. But the thing I probably played the most this week is, well, it's a tie between two games. Tiny Tower, is it, on the Android platform. Played that. It's one of your basic build a society type of games. You start with one floor and you add people to it, and then you make another floor and you can make little residential areas or little stores and have the people work in there, and then you just build floor after floor. I thought at first they were really going to gouge you and it would be one of those games where you play for 5 minutes and then you can't really progress unless you pay actual money and mm-hmm. get stuff. But no, you can, if you just play it at the bus stop and here and there, it's a great game for that. You can just play a little.
Even a game.
Yeah, you turn it on.
No, it's not.
You turn it on, you fix up whatever is wrong, you turn it off again. Unfortunately,
I actually made like iPhone's game of the year app.
I don't know about that.
It's, I mean,
really?
I played much better games.
Like, even if you put people in jobs they hate, even if you do the worst possible, even if you work the tower the worst possible way you possibly could, nothing bad will happen. You'll still make money. You will still keep playing the game. There's just no way to mess.
Yeah,
right. You just do it less efficiently, but it's still.
At some,
I'm playing. Right now. I'm at, how many floors do I have on this fucking thing? I'm at 57 floors right now.
Wow. That's a lot more than I have.
I was at about 16 or 17 floors in, and I was buying a new floor. I had just enough money to buy a new floor, and the game lagged. It started lagging, and it said, please wait. And then when it unlagged, when the lag was over, I had, let's say it was 30,000 to buy a level, and I had 30,000 exactly. And I bought the level, and when the game lag ended, I was at negative 30,000, and I had bought two floors. So I now had a negative $30,000 balance, which is kind of hard to get out of, and then you have to use money to buy goods. And
I don't know if you can come back from that.
I guess you could, because you get rent, but you would have to play for days.
Oh, you do get rent,
Set your system clock on your phone ahead a week or something. You'll have enough money, but I don't want to mess with that.
Well, that sounds like a glitch,
It's
right?
a glitch, and it just totally, it totally killed my interest in the game. It just,
the game is not worth it.
Leaping back, and then somebody kicks a leg, and you fall on your head. I was just totally flat.
Any sort of setback would have made me turn this game off a long time ago. The fact that you just can't do anything wrong is the only thing that keeps... It's like a screensaver. Once in a while, I'll turn it on, push a few things, and then that's it. It's like,
oh, hey, guys, I just turned on my Tiny Tower, and it told me that I can go on the hottest dates, befriend the coolest cliques, and shop for the trendiest clothes in the social girl.
You know what? They used to give you bucks, tower bucks.
They give you five tower bucks when you would check out something or give it a good rating.
But they haven't done that in a while. They just... point me towards these games. They're like, hey, do you want to play something stupid? I'm like, no, not without Tower Bucks, friend. So
yeah,
I don't
tower
know
bucks. Oh my
I have
God.
To stock all my stuff. Apparently I haven't played it in a couple months and I earned $13,000. I don't know what that
means. Well, that's because you have stuff. To stock your stores. Once the stock is gone,
yeah, there's a lot of boxes
money
here.
Yeah,
and you have to, the thing that sucks is that you can get the stocking started, but when they actually have enough stock to put in, they just wait for you to just click on the stock
right
before they actually they won't sit. They'll have all this merchandise sitting there, constant stream of people going through the store, but they won't actually sell anything unless you click, you tap your little finger on the open box that they have there, which is stupid. But it's a game worth having on your phone. But it's not game of the year. Is
the game itself
insane.
Is free, isn't it?
Yeah, it's free. I think they really dropped the ball on the whole Tower Bucks thing, because you can pay money to get some of this fake currency, but unless you want to just really build up a tower very, very quickly, there's no reason for it. You can just there's really no reason.
If you're
you have to be
pathologically impatient, then you will get the Tower Bucks. You don't need to.
I think they dropped the ball.
There's a game in the TNL arcade called Corporation Inc. that is a similar kind of game, and that's much better than this. So, but this is an interesting thing to have on your phone if you're like I said, if you just want to play something for 5 minutes at a bus stop. It's almost like having a virtual pet, I guess. You just check in on it. It's like, oh, clean up the poop and then put it in your pocket again for another day. And
the poop or the
there's no poop.
I was thinking if there's a virtual pet, you would have. I don't know what you do.
That's what. Yeah, he's just talking about
you poop.
Right. You touch it a little bit. It poops.
But I actually did play a very good game this week. And
Kawaii Pet Magoo?
No. Not quite as good, but it was good. Called Trine 2. TRINE 2. I played it on Steam. It's coming out. I think last week I said it was coming out December 20th. I think that's coming out on Xbox Live on December 20th. I think that's why I got confused. But it's been out on Steam for more than a week now. And I talked about it a little bit last week. I beat the game. It took me I can't tell you how long it takes to beat the game, because this game does so many things right. And one of the things it does right is that you can have a second player jump in at any time and a third player jump in at any time, I assume, and just take over. And the transition from the single player game to a multiplayer game is pretty much not there. There's no transition because it's seamless. You can be playing one player, and you can even be a puzzle that you get stuck in. And if you have, I had the Xbox 360 controllers plugged into my PC. So if there was a puzzle where I said, you know, it's kind of hard for one guy to get past this, I could just press start on the second controller, you know, bring in the second player and, you know, play both of them for a second to get past that puzzle. And then I press the start button again and the second player is gone and I can continue. It does so many things right. It has separate difficulty settings for combat and puzzle difficulty. And that's something that I've always wanted. I think Deus Ex did it. I think I brought this up on a previous podcast. I think Deus Ex did that, where some people just don't really want to sit there and master the combat, or they get frustrated if they lose. So you put the combat down lower. Some people want more of a challenge. Some people don't want to sit there and figure out puzzles, you know, until their heads hurt. So you can set it for it to give you a clue after a certain time, or no clue at all. So you can set it to your style of gameplay. And it's a Lost Vikings style of game where you have three characters. You can control all three of them and alternate between them, or you can have each player take a character. If you're playing with two players, you guys could switch between characters. You go through this beautiful 2D world, and it's kind of a fairy tale that you play through. You have a wizard, a knight, and a Assassin's Creed type of thief. And the wizard can levitate boxes. The thief can do stealth attacks and fire arrows, and the knight can do melee damage. And another thing it does right is you unlock different powers as you go along, and those are spaced apart very well too. You always have something new to do in the game. It keeps you very interested. I haven't written the review yet, and I almost would give it a 5-star review. The only thing I could fault this in is that you don't really connect with the characters. And I understand in this type of game you don't need to, but it's just a little too fairy tale-y, to coin a phrase. It's a little bit too much of a disconnect, where it's too much of a game. Whereas I think it has the potential to pull you in even more to the story. The voice acting is very solid, and the graphics are very solid. It's just very hard to find a fault with this game, and I would unreservedly recommend it to anybody from a hardcore gamer to a more casual gamer that just plays Tetris and Peggle. This is something that this is a dream game for a lot of developers, in that it can pull in a wide spectrum of people, and
that's cool.
And so, totally recommend. I recommend it more than I've recommended anything since the podcast started. I think
it sounds like a step up from the first game. The first game I would not give such a glowing recommendation. I wouldn't say it was bad in any way. It just wasn't that engaging, really.
Yeah, there's just something about connecting with it at some level that just doesn't work. It doesn't pull you in at a certain level, but technically it's a very proficient game. There's no weakness to it. It's mm-hmm. fun. You know, the old Game Pro scale with the graphics, sound, fun factor.
Is the head blowing up?
Yeah, it would probably get the head blowing up all the way across.
5.0.
It's a very good game. And yeah, that's what I've been playing this week. So I hope there's something that good to play next week.
My Steam list from one of those indie sales, and I have never even installed it.
So
talking about the first one?
Yep.
I think we still need to hear from Chuck. Chuck's, don't we?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, yes, we do. Where is he? There he is.
Yeah. No, I was reading about that wonderful coincidence for that Pokemon thing.
Oh, because
because I've been playing Pokemon Black. What the hell is going on here?
What happened?
I don't know. Somehow I got into it. I think I've put about 11 hours into it. I'm playing it, so it's fun. I guess I like it. It's
the same game, isn't it? Or is there something?
Yeah, no, it's not anything particular. But I think it's the first one. I always had this idea in my head that, you know, there was Red and Blue, and I played that way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything else seemed to just be a rehash of Red and Blue, with like the same type of story, the same type of, you know, Pokemon, all that other good stuff.
I would agree with that strongly. Yes.
Yeah, and then I thought that this was the first one that was actually built for the DS instead of being like a generation behind. Like one of them was built for the GBA, but they were like, oh, let's put it on the DS, kind of like Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
So that I got it as part of a buy two get one free, so it was one of my free games. But I like it a lot. Like I said, 12 hours into it. Other than that, I've been playing Saints Row 3 with Mike's. We've been doing a lot of co-op. I'm about 83% done the game, so I'm going to go for 100%, and that'll be the first open-ended game, or open-world game, that I've done 100% in, which is neat, because Saints Row 1 was the first open-world game that I beat, period. We're getting into a lot of trouble, too, because I'll just go run around, grab people, do a neck snap, and then anybody else who sees it, I turn it into a game and I have to kill them also. But I don't have any issues, you know? We're not throwing people downstairs or... what else do I do? Oh, I get on a motorcycle and I'll put the nitrous on, and Mike will be on the back of it, and I'll just jump off without telling him and ram him into buildings. That's a lot of fun.
That's kind of like real life.
Yeah, you know.
Bothering Mike.
Push him into traffic, stuff like that. He took a picture because he was like, what the fuck is going on with this game? I was a toilet with the dildo bat and I was beating up a cop with it. It was fantastic. This game is so absurd. Everybody should give it a shot. What else did I do? I beat Sonic CD, which isn't a huge accomplishment, but I was really glad to have that finally out on the Xbox. Now I have every Sonic game worth playing on that wonderful system.
And you have the Sonic Boom song stuck in your head, I'm sure.
You know what? I want to talk about Sonic CD a little bit now that I remember, because I was confused about that game. I've heard people say that it's a very good port, right? Or that it's the same game. But then I've heard people say that it's improved. The controls have been improved. So is it 100% an exact port, or is it, what the fuck is it?
I think there's a couple alterations to it. If I remember correctly, this was actually a fan group that made this port.
It wasn't even a group. It was a person. It was one guy.
Right, yeah, it's a fan dude. That, like, Sega, use this. It runs better than your own Sonic games.
Than any garbage you've ever made, yeah.
Yeah, well, and all of those, what was it, Backbone Entertainment did the other ones?
Yeah, because all the other Sonic games run that they like frame drop and stuff, and this one was like the first one to run it like 60 frames a second on an iPhone, and the guy made this port back in like 2009.
Yeah, 09.
Yeah, it was like, guys should use this because I made this and it fucking works.
Yeah, he built an engine. He the article, it's posted in the thread. I think somebody posted it, but it goes through, and he made this entire engine that's very good for 2D games, whether it be like a top-down RPG or, you know, something like Sonic. He went through and he didn't reverse engineer any particular game, but you can put the game, and I'm very layman's term here. You can, one way or the other, put whatever game it is that you were trying to play into this engine, and then it will port it to wherever it needed to go, this being the iPhone, what he was trying to get it onto. And then, of course, it obviously went into PC and Xbox and PlayStation 3, all that good stuff.
Dreamcast.
Can he play it on the Dreamcast? Did he do that?
Really? I don't know. You said DC.
No, I said PC.
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 Yeah, PC. Thanks for just ruining the momentum, Chris.
With his flow.
Jesus, what am I going to do?
What an asshole.
I know, seriously. Now, I didn't play a lot of Sonic CD because I never had a Genesis. I would always go over a friend's house and play it until it was way late. Until it was way late. But so I couldn't really tell you if anything immediately fell off. You know, like, I don't remember.
I think he altered one of the spin dashes. I saw some mention. I think that's like...
Oh, I have. I mean, I have a Sega CD in storage, but nearby, so I could just try to dig it out and see if there is a difference.
Well, in old Sonic CD, could you keep on mashing the button on the spin dash, or was it kind of you did it once and it was done?
No, you had to keep tapping it, as I recall.
Well, there were two.
And then when you stopped doing it, then you...
And then there was the...
There was the spin dash and the peel out.
It was press up and then you peel out, yeah. I think I used to peel out more.
Why? It would always get hit.
But it looks cool.
It does look cool.
I don't remember. All I remember is that the game wants you to do all this stupid stuff, and it's kind of annoying to do because you don't have room to do it. Like, there was way too much.
Whenever you get hit by Future, you'll find a way to mess up and go into the future. But if you need to go in the past and find the evil generator or whatever it is, you're not going to find it. Like, you'll get right before you're about to, you know, hit 88 miles per hour. And then it'll stop. And you're like, oh, great, I need to go find another signpost.
I mean, the level design felt way too busy for Sonic, in my opinion. I mean, I know a lot of people like this game, but I don't know. I guess I just want to go fast. Got to go fast. I'm sorry. You know, like, that's why I play Sonic. I play it for the platforming element and the speed. And this was more of a exploration-based platformer.
Yeah.
But sometimes you had to go fast, and it made it very difficult to, unless you had mapped out the area and knew exactly where you could find an uninterrupted patch of land. And I didn't have the patience to do that. When I wanted to go to the past, I just wanted to go to the fucking past. I didn't want to, like, take out the graph paper and fucking map out which area would let me actually
build up. Sonic?
No, you don't. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But only a little bit.
Yeah, not a whole lot of exaggeration there.
It's like, imagine a really big level that you go back and forth in, and there's, like, enemies, obstacles, whatever, and you don't really get to run through it at supersonic speed as much as you do with the other Sonic games. But then you get to, like, you power yourself up, so now when you go a certain speed, you'll travel to the past. So you have to maintain that momentum and gain a certain amount of speed for a set amount of time. So you have to find an area of the level that will let you accomplish this, which is not every area of the level.
No.
Because just when you're building up speed, you'll hit rock and you'll stop moving.
You have the graphical cue showing you that you're almost there, and then you'll probably hit a rock, like you said.
Yeah, and then you lose your charge over time, and then you're like, well, or you get hit, and you're like, well, that was that, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Now I have to either start again or I don't know.
The sad part about that is I would go through the stages looking for two springs right next to each other. And there's no reason to have the two springs unless they knew, hey, this is going to be an issue for you back into the past.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. Call it poor level design. But I like the game. I like the music. It's a lot of fun. And for $5, you know, they're not putting out arcade games for $5 anymore on Xbox.
No, it's definitely a great value, especially if you've never played the game. I've always been curious about the game. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm just saying these are the issues I had with it. I mean, I will blow up the most insignificant things that go wrong with a great game just to have something to complain about. So if I ever complain about the game, if in the end I say it's good, it's a good game, and you may not even notice the things I complain about. So in the end, Sonic CD is a good game. I just like to complain about that aspect of it, which will crop up, honestly, if you play the game. You will be a little frustrated by wanting to go fast and not being able to, and you're like, but I'm Sonic, goddammit.
Well, I mean, you can still do time attack, and that's what I'm doing now, because there's an achievement for getting everything under 25 minutes, and I'm like at 26 and some change.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of levels where you can go through it, and you're done it in 44 seconds if you're not being stupid and looking for a path signpost and then trying to find out where you can run and all that stuff. Just be stupid, hold right, and push A every now and then.
and pause the game when you're drawing on your graph paper so you don't run down the timer.
That's true. That's about it.
All right. So I think
I'm sorry. Should I talk about some Korean MMOs? Were you falling asleep during Sonic?
I think we're at past two hours.
Let's wrap it up for the year.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all back. We're going to take a week off, and then we'll be back in 2012.
But of course, we never take any time off the site. So Google The Next Level and come join us on our forums.
Check it out at the-nextlevel.com.
Hooray!
Right.